Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Tea with Lily. I'm your host Lily Mensah-Barr and joining me on the sofa today is the maestro of improvisation and master builder of confidence, Elvin Box. Welcome Elvin and thanks for stopping by for a spot of tea with me. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you Lily, really well and so delighted to be asked along to the sofa for a chat and a cup of tea. I'm really grateful, in good form, yeah.
Lovely. Now let's hear a bit about the brand named Elvin Box. He's a chartered builder with an MBA. Elvin specializes in the management of creativity, innovation and change. He's an international keynote speaker and facilitator whose reputation has earned him assignments on the UK Strategic Defence Review and High Speed 2. Elvin is the tutor on the Open University Business School's MBA and contributed to the business books My Voodoo by Firth and Carayol and Business Creativity Practitioner's Handbook by Dr. Kames Raja. Elvin has also contributed to the BBC Open University TV programmes. Tea with Lily is a space for informal discussions with a relaxed format where we chat about topical issues over a cup of tea. Guests from all walks of life join me to share their experiences and provide tips and tricks for professionals and entrepreneurs interested in career and personal growth. Mr. Elvin Box, you could easily be seen as David Beckham's slightly poorer relation in that you were born in Walthamstow E17 in London and aspired to be a footballer earlier in life. What were some of the highlights of this footballing journey?
Well, Lily, I think the a major highlight would be that I was made to feel included.
Okay.
In top London clubs at that time, but the time it was Chelsea and Queen's Park Rangers. yeah, and
you should have said Arsenal.
Yeah, no, they didn't show any interest, unfortunately. So Tottenham did, Chelsea did, West Ham nearly did as my love of my life, but Chelsea and QPR actually followed it up.
Okay.
Definitely this field of inclusion, and when you, I was just a schoolboy, so I was in my early years at secondary school, and to be taken in and to made to feel included in that, this is what I watched to tell you about. This was, you know, these were my heroes. I really have to make a point. Yeah, I was in the presence of excellent role models. The people who trained us were picked. Now, there's a guy called Frank Sibley at Queen's Park Rangers. This guy made his debut at 15 years of age. Tragically, he had to give up his career around about 23, 24 through a knee injury. And looking back, as this made me really reflect, was that he was one of my first role models and one of the reasons why I love coaching. His coaching style grabbed me, and I recognised early on that I just really loved that. And there was another guy there called Frank McClintock, and his dedication was noticeable. I remember arriving early, as you would do when you're schoolboy on your holidays, and you're being asked to go to the training, and he was there a solid 2 hours before anybody else and started to his runs and his training. So these are wonderful role models. Brilliant. And all for a relatively brief moment, I did live the dream. I was living the dream. It was fantastic. And unknowingly, it did shape my desire for coaching, and was, without doubt, it developed physically high levels of energy.
Which
I, and to this very day, have stood the test of time. And this, without a doubt, a lust for life. So at a very early age, I was doing something I truly adored.
Yeah.
And that hasn't left me. So although the career left me, the lust for life and everything else that came out of it hasn't.
Fantastic, that's great. So how then did this footballing journey come to just be a pipe dream in the end?
Yeah, there was tears that day.
oh dear.
I don't know, you know, that's life. It was very interesting. I was told by Frank Sibley, fun enough. And there was a lesson in how to deal with something that's so sensitive.
Yeah.
How they dealt with it. They explained that at my age, they weren't prepared to offer me what was termed an apprenticeship contract, but they were prepared. They wanted another look. Let's take one as an amateur. Let's look at you over the next 12 months. Okay. Play for you know, you come in during the week for midweek coaching, and let's have a look at you then.
Okay.
Now there's a salutary lesson learned. You never ever assume. They have said to me, oh, there's another club who actually are interested in you. Now, so the choice is yours, Elvin. You could stay with us as amateur, mm-hmm. or we'll introduce you to this other club. Now, I'd been approached by Crystal Palace. I thought they were talking about Crystal Palace. They weren't. They were talking about Fulham.
Cool.
And it could have been a different story.
Yes.
So I shut the door. And stupidly thinking they meant Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace were only interested in doing exactly the same. And so because of one thing or another, I'd understood that what was holding me back was that I was unable to develop and nurture this true resilience, because I was, when I wasn't playing well, I was taking it to heart and I couldn't fight back. And you need to take it on the chin. And that's what I learned from that. That's why I changed.
But you were very young though, weren't you, to be able to understand some of these challenges and how to deal with them.
That was, without a doubt, if there'd been somebody like who could have said, no, look, don't get down. You know, you're very, very young. You made these mistakes. We can learn from that, and you go out again.
Yeah.
You haven't become overnight a poor footballer, because you do need that confidence, that unswerving, undoubted knowledge. You are good.
Yes.
And then I've got to tell you this, there was, at that age, I remember clearly, that's when I started going out with my now wife.
Okay.
This was a long time ago. Yeah, a long time ago. And I remember as I finished training one night, I thought to myself, I shall play for Queen's Park Rangers, because I've been told.
You were good enough.
You are good enough.
Yeah.
At 14, they said, you will play for this first team at 18.
Okay.
And then I thought, I'll also marry Judith. And at the end of the, you know, one out of two is not bad. I've probably got the better of the two. So
absolutely, absolutely.
There you go.
So, that's a really, really good story. So we thank Judith. From footballer to an apprentice, i.e. apprentice carpenter and joiner, you swapped your dribbling skills for drilling instead. Was this by chance or by choice?
this was a complete chance. I've got to say, I saw this as my gap year, because even though I sort of turned my side on professional footballer, I saw this as a gap year, and I'll just do this so that I've got something to fall back on if necessary.
Yes.
And I've got to thank my lifelong friend, Gary Matty. Mm. I should actually thank his mum. She'd found a course for him at the local, what was Yule Tech, now Nescot. You're in Epsom, near Epsom, and she said, this would be good for you, Gary. This is like, it's a pre-apprenticeship course, 9 months at college, and I went along for the ride. Quite honestly, because he said it to me, I said, well, yeah, obviously I'm still going to be a footballer.
Yes.
And I do remember that was the seed corn for everything going forward, because I got into learning. It's a bit of a shame. Secondary school hadn't done it for me, but this had. Different people with an enthusiasm for what they did. And hence, that's why I started being called John Boy.
John Boy, okay. The John Boy of Walthamstow.
I started getting called John Boy, and that, without a doubt, was the best move at that time, because I then started becoming interested in education, knowledge, and the rest of the story, as they say, it's completely, you know, it just went from there.
Okay.
It just went from there.
So we're still on the John Boy of Walthamstow, you know, always studying, always sharing, sharing what you know and trying to motivate others. I mean, that's how people saw you back in the day.
Yeah.
That said, your personal brand continues to be expressed in a similar fashion, i.e. the John Boy helping people, studios, doing all those things. How do you feel about that?
I am completely over the moon about that. I couldn't be happier. Mm. It is something that is... it's just magnificent to be able to do it. You know that the saying, when you learn, you teach, and when you get, you give.
Yes, yes.
Beautiful quote. And that I saw that only recently, and that sums up where I am. So for everything that's happened, yes, I've got to the stage when I can actually teach, I can actually give.
Yes.
And so I couldn't be happy with that. It's been a privilege, mm-hmm, to acquire the knowledge, the life skills, and the ability to impart knowledge, and to be able just to impart enthusiasm and motivation and inspiration.
Absolutely.
You know,
a builder by trade, yet you have an MBA graduate,
mm,
turned tutor.
Indeed.
When asked what you do, what would it be? A chartered builder, an MBA tutor, or will it be something completely different?
It's a great question. I think...
You wear many hats.
Yeah. Yeah, not all, you know, well, yeah. That's a very significant part of me. That's another thing I've recognised, is that a guy said to me about 10 years ago, said, "Your name is Box, you cannot be put in one, can you?" And I said, "No, I can't, no, and I don't mean to be like that, and I apologise, that's just, I can't do anything
you
about
that."
You
can't put a box in a box. Lovely.
And so you picked up a brilliant question, because I struggle sometimes, and I think the only way I can say it is that I am a business improver, mm-hmm, or as people say, a business improviser, whichever way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose now the best way to say it, I'm a consultant in creativity, innovation and change. I facilitate, I educate, and I talk to any audience, you know, with, mm-hmm, with a roaring passion for that. And my domain-specific knowledge is construction.
Yes.
And it goes from there, really. So if you want a facilitator, yes. If you want someone to come in and do some training, yes. Anyone to do motivational stuff, yes. Coaching, yes. So,
and anything in between.
Yeah, that's where I am. I'm probably the luckiest person I know, because I'm a builder in the widest sense now.
Yes, yes.
I do... facilitate the building of businesses, mm-hmm, which I do, the building of high performing teams, and the thing that gives me the greatest joy is that I build back people's self esteem and their self realization.
Mm. So, you know, you sort of do the bricks, and then there's the brain stuff as well. It's quite an interesting thing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's hard mechanical stuff,
yes,
and very emotional stuff. Yeah. So I've said to people, I am the luckiest person I know.
Great. I'm glad to know you.
I'm the luckiest person I know.
Thanks, Elvin. This is Tea with Lily, and I'm here with improv maestro, as I call him, Elvin Box, chartered builder and MBA tutor, sharing his passion for creativity, innovation and know-how about the construction industry. Elvin also supports various charities through his pro bono work and is passionate about paying forward. Now, let's talk about the improv, creativity, stand-up comedy and all that.
Hmm.
Elvin, I've seen you get often really shy people pull off their masks and perform in front of virtual strangers using the idea of improvisation.
Yeah.
How did the love affair with improv and innovation begin?
First of all, that is a beautiful way that you've put that, because it is true and unreflective that people do peel off their innocent mask. The love affair, it goes right back. It's my dad's fault, or it's my dad's. He did unknowingly. I was always encouraged, even as soon as I could stand and speak, to say to people what I'd done.
Okay.
Well, tell them what you did, Elvin. And so, like my aunties, my uncles, so I find my own voice very, very early on. They used to get me to entertain my two nans. One of them, honestly, would cry with laughter. And she used to say to him, she said, George, you've got to get him on the stage. I can't believe him. And so that's when you're that little, that makes an effect. And then I recognised that I was the classroom comedian. And that's a tremendous, there's a heck of a buzz when you know you're making people happy. You just know that's good.
Yes, yes.
And then being taken to watch the pantomime as a little one.
Mm-hmm.
And loving that. And I went to see Norman Wisdom.
Oh, dear.
And that was it. I want to do that. And
I'm saying oh dear in a good way because that's what you're going.
Oh yeah, that was it. You know, then I just wanted to perform. That was so cool seeing this guy, but getting brilliant laughs. And I was the theatre. I just into this. I think he's wonderful. Live music, live theatre is absolutely perfect.
Anything live.
Yeah. So and then it would obviously lay dormant for some years. And people don't believe me. I did my master's in business administration, and that's when I saw the connection with creativity and innovation and change, the theoretical side of it. It underpinned beautifully, basically what Norman Wisdom was doing. Obviously, and the latter day, Eddie Izzard. I could see it all, and I was enthused. I've got to go play with this now.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I've completed the Masters, other people go and probably do a PhD. I went to learn stand-up. I went to learn improvisation with David Bourne and Sprout. And the rest, again, is just history. That was it. I was away. Once they taught me the rudiments of stand-up and improvisation, that was it. I could see how I could use it.
Yes.
And away we went. So, it's very much, it was shaped, laid dormant, and then bosh, bang, I found another way of doing it. And again, it's this thing about your life is you meet people.
Yes.
And unknowingly, they open the door and they usher you in without you even knowing it.
Yeah, because you're open to the idea of receiving something. That's how I believe it.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Once you're open to the idea of positive stuff coming your way, eventually it does. So if at the back of your mind, you might have thought, oh, I understand comedy, I'd like to do a little bit more, but I'm in a business where perhaps it's not part of what we do.
Yes.
How can I find the two to, find ways for the two to meet? And sometimes it works. That's fantastic.
Yep.
So, Elvin, you have a knack of taking complex information and translating everyday words and drawings using improvisation. I mean, construction is a minefield for many of us. So could you please give us an idea of what that might entail in terms of using improv in your everyday work?
Sure. It stems from school. My mum and dad were told when I was seven, the teacher said, if you gave an opportunity, Elvin would draw all day long.
Draw?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. And so what happened is that I'm extraordinarily visual. And so drawing for a long time, especially when I was a young construction manager and I needed to get something across to one of the guys, I would do 3D sketches.
Oh.
So if there's something quite different, I would use 3D sketches. And that's progressed. When I started tutoring from the MBA, that gave me the opportunity to actually use improvisation and actment to where I was going with various theory, because it all underpinned it.
I suppose with comedy, it sort of makes things easier to understand, perhaps.
I believe in telling storytelling, and I believe in drawing pictures and embellishing.
Yes.
And so with my work now, when I do, for instance, a strategy, we had two strategy workshops recently, and they were very improvised.
Yes.
There, and as with all good improvisation, there was a level of form. But getting guys to do stuff and draw stuff.
Okay.
And so that they could actually give them an option. So, what is quite difficult is, especially when it's emotional, when strategy in this instance requires people to come up with good ideas because they need to look at different offers within the business to grow the business.
Yes.
That comes in very useful because it means people think literally outside of the box.
But I guess people laugh less the higher up they are.
Mm.
So do you find that in your work?
Yes. Yes, the more enlightened, I'm extraordinarily fortunate. I have to work with a couple of very enlightened people who are higher up. What a lovely American phrase, the higher ups.
Yeah, higher up. They have corner offices and all that.
Yeah, but they get it. They get it.
Okay.
But they are in the minority. The majority still think it should be about doing things very quickly, behind a desk,
mm-hmm.
and that everybody should be in order.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there's loads of research that will tell you is that if you want to get the best, you take away the physical barriers.
Yes.
You loosen people up to the extent that they are relaxed, and you get something called a relaxed attention.
Ooh, relaxed attention.
Yeah. Mm. It's a lovely phrase how we should be. And all good school teachers know that, is at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, before everyone goes home, when there's a relaxed attention, they will tell stories, and they are more memorable, more compelling.
Yes, than everything they've learnt in the morning.
And so that's unfortunate that that's still a barrier to cross, but that's a great challenge. It's a great challenge. That's one of the things I really enjoy about the job. Quite apart from the fact I get to draw. Things to help people understand, like rich pictures, they're called in creativity.
I saw something earlier written about you, about being part of Yellow Jacket.
Mm.
What does that mean? What is Yellow Jacket?
Yeah, Yellow Jacket
leadership.
Is... Yep. It is cloud-based.
Mm-hmm.
It's a health, safety and quality environmental tool.
Okay.
And... the part I play, which is, see, that's getting good toys for Christmas, is that I work with the guys
mm-hmm.
on organisational change, and they know, as we know, is that Yellow Jacket being a system
okay.
is a form of change, and that means that the people need to change to actually meet the system.
Oh, there's me thinking they had Yellow Jacket to do with what you see on the construction sites.
Oh, is it? Yeah, no, it's cool because
of course I'm lay person, so I ask silly questions.
No, it's a brilliant question because they've just come up with an app.
Okay. Oh.
And,
okay.
And so it means you can actually take it out on your mobile.
Okay.
And what you see on the construction site, whether it be a quality issue or a safety issue or an environmental issue, you can actually talk with somebody about it. And because I'm very much into the fact that touch screens.
Mm-hmm.
Are a very good way of communicating. They break down barriers.
Yes.
So you're not talking to the person directly, now you're talking to the screen.
Mm.
And apparently by touching the screen, we take in more. That's why advertisers are using more apps that you actually touch the screens.
Oh, okay.
So that's a wonderful use of my knowledge and my skill, is that it's all about change and it's about helping people adapt to something as technique. It is fairly advanced, especially for a construction organisation, to start using to capture what's happening on their project.
Okay. Wow. Yellow Jacket. I will remember that. Elvin, your passion for making construction a healthier, safer and more enjoyable working environment stems from an incident about 25 years ago.
Yes.
What happened?
Yeah, the story is this, is that on a Monday,
mm-hmm.
a young guy named Chris, early 20s, literally turned up on our project. It was a project in Knightsbridge.
Yes.
Right on Knightsbridge, 21 Knightsbridge.
Mm.
And the facade looks over Hyde Park. And what happened is that Chris was only there because actually he was a minicab driver. Someone had stolen his car on the Friday,
mm-hmm.
so he came looking to get work on a construction site on the Monday.
Yeah.
Now, what happened was that there was a fault on the scaffolding
mm-hmm.
and with the runoff to the hoist. So on the sixth floor, on a Wednesday afternoon, Chris had been there. He'd only been there 2.5 days. Remembering he'd only was there because someone had stolen his car.
Yes.
And what happened was that, very unfortunately, as he walked out onto the hoist as it got to the sixth floor level, his came back, and very unfortunately, there was a gap that was sufficient. Everybody said he wouldn't fall through it. He provided evidence a human can fall through an 18-inch gap. There was a piece of ply that fell. Chris followed it six floors through a hoist tower, and he fell to his death. Mm. The effect is that I witnessed a very hard-nosed Irishman. Mm-hmm. He actually cried a pool of tears.
Yes.
When you see old people cry, they don't really take it in. But he convulsed. Mm. His body convulsed. He hid his head in his hands for over an hour. And he didn't stop crying. And there was, on the vinyl floor, a pool of tears in front of him. Mm. Which is, you know, for a visual person, yeah. I'm taking all this in. My colleague, who was the project manager, was visibly shaken. He was again in tears, and he was shaking.
So you guys saw it all happen?
I was in the building when Chris fell.
Yes.
The guy who cried the pool of tears saw him fall.
Wow.
And obviously the other guy hadn't seen him fall, but he was charged with the what happened, and I was taking it all in. And I remember people saying to me, "So you were very, very calm, Elvin." And the truth of the matter was, I wasn't actually calm as you would like to be calm. It was my way of dealing with it. I withdrew within myself.
Yes.
And very unfortunately, a few weeks later, I did have I didn't have a breakdown. It was seen then as a mild form of depression, and I've said to people, if that's mild, I don't want the full Monty. Mm. Because I felt out of control. I felt outside of my universe.
Yes.
It was as though that on that day I got pushed into the parallel universe.
Mm.
And that took me 10 years, truthfully, to really properly get over that.
Yes.
And be able to be happy on the underground and stuff like that. It's an amazing thing.
Mm.
Is that had a major impact. That was a defining moment in my life. And as I've been mentioning, is that, you know, I now know you go through life, and if you use it properly, everything can be used as a positive. Even at that moment in my life, when I went to the doctor and I said I'm feeling bad.
Oh, you did?
I went to the doctor and explained. That I needed something, because that's when I cried and cried and cried, and he explained to me, well, you know, you've been holding it all in, it had to come out.
Yes.
They gave me Valium, and 8 weeks later I was off the Valium, but it took a long time. I didn't have to receive any counselling, which is something I've realised now I should have had.
Yes, things have changed now, though, haven't they?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and so it was a defining moment, and I say to people, I probably wouldn't do what I do now with such a passion if it had not been that defining moment. Everything changed after then.
Yes.
And without a doubt, I've tried to explain to people, is that I could not lift Chris to see how he was, because the guy who cried that pool of tears had done.
Yes.
Another guy got there and said, oh, don't look at his face.
Oh, okay.
And my wife, Jude, has said, that was the best thing you ever did.
Yes.
Because that could have been a different story from here on in.
Mm.
And do you know, I never actually saw his face. Even the day he joined, and he was looking up, he held his hand up because there was a bright light in his face. I never saw Chris's face, and that was probably a good thing.
Yes, well, thank you for sharing such a painful episode in your life. It can't be easy, and I appreciate that. This is Tea with Lily, and I'm here with improv maestro Elvin Box, chartered builder and MBA tutor, sharing his passion for creativity, innovation and know-how about the construction industry. Elvin also supports various charities through his pro bono work and is passionate about paying forward. Elvin, we hear so much about construction being a difficult industry to break into. What would be your advice to those considering a career in the industry?
Well, the time is ripe.
Great.
Because currently...
Should I polish up my CV?
Well, you know, the proof of the matter is that London, London alone, requires over the next 5 years, close on 9,000, remarkable, isn't it? 9,000 extra tradesmen.
Tradespersons,
I should say, yeah.
Yes, you should.
And there's an interesting figure. 1,800 workers, 1,800-ish workers, between now and 2019, because each year that's the shortfall.
And that's, really?
Yeah. That's remarkable, isn't it? Absolutely remarkable. So
it must be the only industry with such a, and perhaps such a nursing with such a shortfall, you know.
It's just really starting to come out of the recession that it suffered in 2007. It's its own worst enemy as an industry, because where. Let's say just after the war, from the 60s through to the late 70s, there was recognised apprenticeships, there was truly a boom in construction education, and they were there basically to fulfil the need. Apprentices cost a lot of money, training costs a lot of money, things have changed, the way things are structured, but we've got to a situation where we're now starting to come out of recession. You only have to look around Vauxhall.
So much going on.
It's huge. And the Battersea Power Station alone. So there's, in London, there's several major developments coming out of the ground. So I would, because of an ex-tradesperson, you know, I did my apprenticeship, that would suit so many more people than they probably recognise.
Yes.
And it's not as though you're going to be looking for work. Once you've got there, you're there. And I say this to people, is that you've got a job for the life around the world.
Yes.
You know? So that's that side of it. You know, there is definitely a need. Now, that means there's also going to be a need for people, for its MACE, do trainees.
Yes.
So they haven't been to university, they haven't got any construction experience, so that, cause they get the apprentices.
Yes.
And so they're trainee managers.
I see.
So MACE do that, and I believe other organisations are also going that route as well. Those who didn't want to go into university, whatever reason, they get, they have got that route.
Okay.
Yes, there is the graduate route, which is traditional in construction, and then civil engineering, and I would still, I would, yes, definitely promote anyone who is looking for a career, because you're never not going to need constructors.
Okay.
You're never not, you know, you won't be able to make it that robotic because of the complexities involved. You know, construction has a lot of emotion in it.
Tell me
even
about
very
it.
Hard-nosed, you know, business people, you know, developers, you know, God bless him.
There's a lot of investment involved, so people have to get emotional about it.
Oh yeah,
you know, we are talking about billions of pounds.
You know, Alan Sugar, you know, he, you know, he's as hard-nosed as they come, but there will be an emotional tie to it because of the fact that nobody wants to be seen to be doing anything these days unless it's socially acceptable. So that alone means that you're always going to need humans, because there's only so much that robots can do. Design work they can do, modelling. For instance, and there's the computer modelling now, BIM as it's called. You know, if anyone has a deep desire for software, that is going to have to be a burgeoning market, and we need those sort of skills.
That's
problem
great.
Solving skills, good planners, good organisers, people who want you know, never forget, you know, we need construction lawyers.
Yes, yes.
We need construction marketeers. You know, there's a whole plethora that we need.
But then that's all well and good. Mm-hmm. But there's an even bigger elephant in the room that we haven't touched on yet, and that is the big gender issue in construction. I mean, for instance, let's take my bright and articulate, confident daughter, who's come out of uni with a very good degree.
Yeah.
She might want to have a career in construction, but is put off by, you know, the hard hats and boots on sites, not to mention the dark pinstripe suits in the boardroom.
Yes.
That is great talent that, you know, the industry is not tapping into. What do you think, or what have you seen the industry doing to attract a more diverse workforce?
From where I sit and look within MACE, MACE brought this to people's attention within the group 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
And it is noticeable that if you go on to a MACE project, you will see now young women working, as they've done for some time, in the cost side of it.
Okay.
And they're starting to become more planners and programmers. But you'll also see construction face, what I would call in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So we have got younger women starting to break into construction and project management on, you know, what gets traditionally called on the muddy boot side of things.
Okay.
There'll always be a need for bright, confident women with design management, as I've said, with the cost managers. So there'll always be a need there. I think as an industry, we do insufficient.
Yes.
UK Construction does insufficient. It talks about it, but it doesn't do anything in a unified manner.
Yeah.
And we go back to the health and safety issues. And what I would say is this. For the front line and the boardroom in construction, we need more women. Reason being is that there's insufficient female influence.
What do you mean by female influence?
Yeah. I'm very much into the fact is that... it is, unfortunately, testosterone laden. It's like a blokes festival. And it means that we will naturally lack.
Yes.
Any community lacks if it doesn't have a good, healthy dose
mm-hmm.
of female ingenuity,
mm-hmm.
sense of family,
yes.
and compassion.
Okay.
Now, in my eyes, you know, I would argue that is that the front line and in the boardroom, we're not a healthy community. We're not a healthy, balanced, diverse community.
Yes.
And that means of the whole range of diversity, the one we miss dramatically is having the female of the species where it needs to be. Because, you know, I've seen it, I've heard it, and I've felt it. It truly is it's too much testosterone.
Yes. Okay, that's good enough. It's work in progress, and it's obviously the landscape looks so much better than it was, say, 25 years ago. So one would hope that it will get better and better and better. Elvin Box, you work as a pro bono consultant for Cancer Research UK through the MACE Foundation.
Yes,
many of us choose charities often for personal reasons. Is that the case for you?
Yes. Cancer Research UK is me initially paying back.
Okay.
My mother-in-law, Bubbles,
mm-hmm.
as everybody called her, though her name
lovely.
Was actually Ina, but everybody called her Bubbles.
Lovely.
Bubbles contracted, this is quite weird actually, she contracted cancer of the lymph gland in and around exactly the same time as Chris was killed on the project
okay.
I worked on. She went for some tests the same day Chris was killed on that project, and a few weeks later she was diagnosed with cancer. And very fortunately, my wife Jude talked around of her initial, well, that's it then, I'll write the will, that's it, it's all over. And Jude worked so hard to give her the confidence that this is not the end.
Yes.
She went through, as the Irish say, she went through the mill with all of the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
However, it gave another 26 years of life.
Fantastic.
She didn't pass away because of cancer, and you know, she kicked the ass of cancer. You know, because I've said, you know, people know I call it. It is the bastard son of the devil.
Yes.
And if they can do that, you can stop it.
Cancer research.
Yeah, absolutely, can be done, and I really, really believe in that. It's not lost on me either that I may need them.
Mm.
I'm human, I'm not immune.
Yes, you never know.
Never know. And so it's paying forward as much as anything else. So there's a two-way thing there.
Mm. Mm.
And it's easy to work for them because it is an utter joy and I can't do enough for them.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, you also raise funds for the Nichols Spinal Injury Foundation.
Yeah.
Called Wherever and Whenever. What's the story behind your support for this charity?
It's all to do with, in 2007, I met Aaron Williams. I was introduced to Aaron by my wife. Aaron at the time was a 25-year-old, fit, vibrant young man in the police force and loving his weekends playing for Basel and Rugby Club.
Okay.
Very, very unfortunately, just after he turned 25, playing for Basildon in the last moments of a game, he had an accident and broke his neck.
Ah.
And he's never walked since. Now, I've said to him that this was my road to Damascus revelation. Up until I'd met Aaron in 2007.
Mm.
I was bemoaning my luck. My wife was getting really upset at me because I said, I've got too much energy, I've got too much rage, I've got too much passion. And then, in meeting Aaron, you do not bemoan your luck. You now turn this all around. And it means that I was able to see, you've got this, use it. You've got a passion, you know, and you have got rage, and you've got a motor, and you've got an ability to motivate and inspire. And go do that, and then ask people in return to give to things like Nichols Spinal Injury Foundation, because the hope is that they will come up with a cure, whatever that they want to, and they believe they can get people walking again.
Yes, yes.
And so that's why I have such a passion for that, is that if I can help in any way, even if it's only a fiver, I don't care.
Yes.
You know, because I get a fiver every time and I do it 50 times, just a few bob going on there,
yeah,
250 quid. So that's where it comes from, is that Aaron is the inspiration. I do dilly squat. Go speak with Aaron. You go see him.
Mm.
As he would say, just keep the ball rolling.
Yes.
You know, life's put okay, and never, ever give in.
Yes.
Yeah, I was only, you know, before that, there was me bemoaning everything that, God, there must be millions of people, just one day like you, Elvin.
Mm.
In fact, 1 hour.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Mm. Well, thank you. Now, what does the future hold for the inspirational speaker, chartered builder, MBA leadership and innovation tutor in Maestro Elvin Box? What is the future for you?
The immediate future is working with the guys on Yellow Jacket, with the Mace guys, and working solidly as I'm at the moment with behavioural management. So that's all inspired by, you know, Chris's death some 25 years ago, to make construction safer and to make a change, legacy, as we say, a transformation. So that's the immediate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The intermediate is that I am wanting to look, I need to get the book. You know, people have said to me for a long, long time is that you need to capture this.
Yes.
And so hence I'm looking, I want to do something on creativity, positivity and legacy, longevity.
Longevity.
Longevity, because I believe they are connected. Mm. And so I've got a couple of people I have in mind to assist and support that.
Okay.
But that I owe that because I've got to get something down. The long term is also being even more philanthropic.
Yes.
Again, it's from being a schoolboy. I was completely enthralled with Richard the Lionheart.
Okay, tell us more.
I thought it was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even then I thought, that's really good, actually fighting for people.
Yes.
For people.
Mm.
And I thought, that's really cool. And the next thing that got me onto it was The Lone Ranger. Now, every little boy of a certain age watched The Lone Ranger. And I forgot what the horse was called now. But anyway, I forgot how wrong. But him and the black mask and this white horse. Wow, that's brilliant.
Was it to be boys and their masks and their horses and riding into the sunset?
How cool. And so it all got round to, I had a discussion with someone in around 15 or so years ago, maybe 20 years ago-ish, when I started getting into the management thing.
Yes.
And they said that, as I described it to them, over a drink and I was drawing as usual, it was Silver the horse, how can I forget? And I explained all that. They said to me that you really want to be the White Knight philanthropist, don't you? And so I said, I've never thought of it like that. I said, yeah. You want to be the White Knight philanthropist, you really do, don't you?
Mm.
And so obviously I went away for some drink and I thought, and in the last 3 years, I think they're right.
Yeah.
Now I've got to that situation where I say I am the luckiest bloke I know.
That's good that you know, you actually say it, because you know some people might have all sorts of stuff going for them but they can't even see or feel it.
Mm.
So you know, that's really nice to hear that.
They were right all those years ago. I do want to be the White Knight philanthropist, and that is, I want to be in a situation where that I can do more philanthropic stuff because I've acquired sufficient base.
Yes.
Mm. To be able to do that, because
to pay forward.
Yeah, I've actually said to people, as I truly believe, is that nobody should have this much energy, this much passion.
Yes, yes.
And I was bemoaning this. No, this is a gift.
It is a gift.
This is a gift. You must end up, because I say to people, they say to me, where do you get your energy? I say, it's easy. I just ask the universe, I say, I promise I'll use it properly, and look what happens.
Yes, it does come. Elvin, that is fantastic. we've heard quite a lot, and we are, I don't know, grateful for having shared so much of your knowledge about the construction industry, some ideas on where to find jobs or how to find jobs or ways of finding jobs within the industry. And we've obviously heard about your passion for philanthropy, innovation and all that. That's really good. And I can't thank you enough for coming and joining me on the sofa to talk about all this, and for me to have the opportunity to share your story with anybody who wants to listen. So listeners, tune in again for the next episode of Tea with Lily. My guest on the sofa will be the lady who makes it all better without medication. Kuljit Sima specializes in helping those with pain through calming energy techniques. If you are in pain or just want to find out how not to reach too often towards your medicine cabinet, this is the show that is a must listen. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Lily Mensah-Yubar, and until next time, keep smiling and always, always look good. Elvin, thank you.
Thank you, Liv.